Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest live episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the Kindle Award-winning novel Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, as well as Pretty Ugly and the recently released The Japanese Box. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martine, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes Dibs, Since September, Move on Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder. Joining us today, we are so excited, is one of our favorites, Christopher Golden, who is here to talk about all things, but our big exclusive, we're just going to call it that because it makes me feel like Barbara Walters. We're going to be talking about Slayers, a Buffyverse story, which is an Audible original, which Christopher co-wrote and co-directed with Amber Benson and stars the original cast of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I feel like anybody who watches the show might know that Allison and I sometimes work Buffy into just random interviews.
Pretty much most of them.
Pretty much most of them. If it's not Adam Driver, we're like, let's rate the people we would sleep with on Buffy in order of hottest to, you know. And we're like, it's the whole cast. So anyways.
So what if Adam Driver were on Buffy? That would be like.
See, he's so young. You know, he would have been like a child on that show.
And a 4-year-old.
Kind of freaks me out. So. Yeah.
Our new Slayer, Indira, portrayed by Leia Delion Hayes. Leia was not born when Buffy went off the air.
Okay, Christopher.
Why would you start the interview like that, Christopher?
I looked her up because I recognized her voice. Do you know why I recognized her voice?
Doc McStuffins.
Yeah, like, seriously, Jennifer has been spared Doc McStuffins. Not that she wouldn't love Doc McStuffins, but she doesn't have children that made her watch Doc McStuffins and didn't throw a Doc McStuffins birthday party for their 4-year-old one time. And yeah, so.
And now she's like, a vampire slayer.
But then I had to get that out of my head.
She's on the Equalizer with Queen Latifah. She plays her daughter.
Oh my gosh.
And she's
so, yeah, this cast was pretty cool to work with. So, Christopher, I know you were sworn to secrecy about this project for so long. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about, what this is and what it was like to hold on to one of the entertainment's biggest secrets for a really long time.
You know, the weird thing is, so firstly, what Slayers is, it's a 9-episode audio drama, an Audible original series featuring many members of the original cast of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Even the original Clem, like I looked it up and going, that sounds just like Clem. It's Clem. And yeah, I still run around going, cholesterol, morals, whenever I'm told I'm not allowed to eat kittens. Yeah. And they brought that back. I was just like, thank you, Clem.
Not only that, so James Leary, who plays Clem, is a good friend of mine, and he's such a wonderful human being. And when we talked about you know, we needed a foil for Spike, you know.
He's a best friend.
Right. Best friend. And also, but again, they had such great chemistry in the few times they were on the show together, that there was just no question in my mind that
even if kittens are a stupid currency.
Yeah, well, he's on the wagon. He hasn't had a kitten in a long time. Yeah.
No more kittens.
He's in Kittens Anonymous. But no, you know, the thing is, it was just something that it was really interesting because even though we knew that it was going to be listened to by many, many people, and we knew that once the news broke and once it came out, social media would be a buzz with it. For us, the experience was very personal, you know, and making it for us, meaning myself and Amber and the cast, it was just a very sort of intimate experience. And so it was sort of ours for a long time before it became yours. And so that was just lovely, you know, so we didn't really think too much about what the overall reception would be.
But you knew we would all, as Buffy fans, go absolutely crazy when we heard.
You know, the interesting thing, yes.
Or did you? Yes.
Yes. The interesting thing though, is that I thought there would be more trolls.
Oh.
And I've been pleasantly surprised by how few trolls there actually have been. I mean, I knew that the people who had their hearts open would receive it in the way it's intended, but I expected there to be more of that group of people who just want to hate everything. And it really,
the people who were like, oh, they're too quote unquote old to be doing this.
Okay,
oh,
so I would say that, but so Abby says, I can't wait to listen to this. Abby, you're definitely going to want to listen to it. It is so fun. It is absolutely a radio drama. So I would start by saying it isn't really a book in many ways because it feels like you're listening to an episode of the show versus like there's not a narrator. It's the characters talking and you hear like the Foley artists of the sound effects and weird sounds as needed. But you get away with them being old because you can't see them. So I know that Juliet Landau and James Marsters have age.
They've aged, unlike vampires.
They are not actually vampires. And right. I last saw James Marsters on The Runaways where he was playing a dad to a werewolf. I mean, the character wasn't a werewolf on that, but he was on Wizards of Waverly Place. But I watched too much television, as you can tell. And he's aged because you know what? He wasn't really super, super young when Buffy was on either. He just looked really good.
He's still just as hot.
Right. Damn. But he doesn't look like he's 20 anymore because he's actually not made of marble.
Yeah.
So Christopher, you're not a stranger to the Buffyverse. Obviously, you've written Buffy novels. So you and Amber were friends. Whose idea was it to kind of, I mean, probably both of yours, but to get justice for some of the characters that I felt were really done wrong?
So, you know,
the list is so long.
The list is so long. But I'm gonna say it. Cordelia is my lifelong favorite character. I love Charisma Carpenter. If I met her, I would openly weep. I just love her so much. And when I heard the premise of this, I did cry. I was just like, oh.
I love that.
I'm like, this is happening for her.
And
Anya
and Tara. I mean, like, basically, there's a list of characters who got shortchanged either because of what the story called for or whatever was going on behind the scenes. And through the magic of, well, magic mostly, and other things.
Actual magic.
So much. We get these characters back and maybe not the exact same version of them, but portrayed by the same person that we know and love, bringing that same energy and feel. And I'm just like,
so basically what happened was that, so again, yes, you're right, Jennifer. I wrote something like 13 Buffy novels. I wrote two video games and tie-in books and comics and all kinds of stuff. And I just have always loved, from day one, I've loved the series. I love the characters and their interactions. And I especially loved how amazing all of the female characters were in the show.
Yes.
You know, my parents were divorced. I was raised by my hardworking mom and my sister and all her girlfriends. So I joke sometimes my mom was straight, but I was raised by a passel of lesbians because it was my sister and her friends babysitting for us.
Is that the technical term when you get a bunch of lesbians together?
Passel. Yes, passel. Yeah. And so for me, I've always been like, I don't know, just sort of focused on a lot of the female characters in the work that I write anyway. And so I loved the show and I loved what they were able to do with these characters. And so, you know, Amber and I became friends really early. She was on the show. We were introduced by a woman named Ali Costa, who at the time was doing both my website and Amber's website, and introduced us. And that's
what a great meet cute.
Sorry?
I said, what a great meet cute.
Yeah. So, well, she brought us to lunch basically. And then eventually at another time I was out in LA and Amber's mom was at the meal that we were having. And she said, oh, Amber's a writer too. And I was like, oh, really? I didn't know that. And it turned out she'd written a number of stage plays and screenplays. And so we ended up, short version, we ended up writing comics together, which turned into novels together, which turned into a BBC animated series together. And so at a certain point, jump ahead, I was talking to Lydia Shama, who was our exec at Audible, and I had known Lydia from her previous job, and Lydia mentioned to me that they were going to be doing Buffy, that they'd gotten the rights to do it, and I was like, well, you know, I mean, Amber and I need to do that,
and
cutting to the chase with it really is that, like, I believe 100% that there's no way this thing would have happened without Amber. because it was the trust and comfort that the cast members had, knowing that Amber was co-writing and co-directing it, and that we were working together on it. That's the only reason that they said yes.
Yeah, because they're like, one of us, one of us.
Exactly. Right.
And I made a bad joke when you said cutting to the chase, cutting to the Cordelia chase. Go on.
Yes, cutting to the Cordelia chase. But as soon as Amber and I started talking about it, we knew that, okay, well, if we're going to do it, there are certain things, you know, boxes we want to be able to check.
Yes.
And the most important one for us was that when we went to record, that when we were all together in the studio, that we created an environment that where everybody would feel like they were happy to be there. And we had such a great time.
So was this the first time you directed something like this?
Yeah. And it's the first time I directed anything that wasn't on stage. Yeah.
Okay. Was that terrifying?
And Ed says, so excited for this. Love hearing how it came together. And yeah, I think a lot of us were just like, how did you get Buffy, which was not something that, like, this is a TV show that aired years ago and you had the rights to be able to do that. So hearing how it all came together is really awesome.
Yeah, it was very cool. Was I terrified? I wasn't terrified. I mean, Amber had directed three or four independent films prior to that. And she had directed Ghosts of Albion. And I had been basically riding shotgun with her through that whole process. And I sort of was helping with some of the actors and their issues while we were doing that at the time. So
like therapy?
Sort of.
you said their issues. No,
that's what directing really is.
And I will jump in to say, I listened to an audiobook not that long ago that Amber Benson was narrating. So I know Amber has the experience doing the Audible book side of it, that she can do all that. So I'm sure she'd be able to get like, this is how we do the books. Cause I'm sure some of these people, they're actors, but what you're doing for an audiobook is a little bit different. Cause you have to be able to hear everything.
You can't be mumblecore.
I did things with my hands. No one saw that. You have to hear it.
Yeah. No, it was great. And I'm glad you said that, actually, Allison, because it reminds me that I want to point out to anybody who listens to this that sort of like a big chunk of why this works and why it's effective is Casey Wayland, who was our third director and producer and is in charge of all of the audio. So Casey and his team did incredible work. And when you listen to this thing, you know,
the sound effects. I have to say that
when it gets to a fight scene or any kind of action scene like that, mm-hmm. it's very hard to convey that in dialogue without it sounding stupid. you need to sort of flesh that out with the sound. Yeah. And Casey and his team did such a great job.
Well, and I will say the one bit of sound that I actually had to back up and listen to again is when Spike starts singing. And I'm just like, believe me, all my friends back in law school were tired of me singing Once More with Failing. I'm like, Spike singing again. Like, stop it. So even hearkening back to that, I mean, the number of things that came in, just little things like Fjörl demons. And I'm remembering Spike knows he speaks Fjörl. Am I speaking English? No, but I speak Fjörl. And that Giles, who is in this, Anthony Stewart Head, I mean, I'm now picturing him dressed as Frankenfurter, because I remember the reason he could do the Fjörl demon transformation in those shoes is he did Frankenfurter, so he was used to wearing those. So I'm sure he appreciated probably not having to get in costume for this, because Ted Lassoing most of the time. So
I know, because I was just thinking of him as the mean boss from Ted Lasso for a little while. I'm like, wait, no, I have to remember that he's my loving Giles.
Jennifer, Amanda Damore wants to tell us that he loved Angel singing Mandy. We always sing the Jasmine version. when Cordelia and Wesley and Gunn are singing We Are the Champions drunk off their gourd, that's pretty much how I sing it too. So they're
that's the way to sing it.
I'll
say something I really, really loved about Slayers was you brought characters together that I don't remember having a lot of good screen time together.
They didn't.
Or none.
I'm like, they were on different series by then.
Different series. So yeah. I have to say, James Marsters and Charisma Carpenter, Cordelia and Spike, are, I wish I could have seen them, because they have very sparkling chemistry. From the very first scene, I'm like, I have a new ship. And mainly because I like love both of those actors and characters so much that whoever they were in any scene with, I'm like, oh, I'm in love with both of them.
You're like upgrading both of them. You're like,
I know. Now I'm like, oh, my two favorites are now.
Yeah. There's, it's interesting because some of that is written, you know, some of that is in the script, and some of it is just James and Charisma responding.
Well, I remember they were in an episode of Supernatural together, and it was at that moment that I was so upset that they didn't have a lot of time in Buffy together.
We were missing it all these years.
Well,
like half, I'm pretty sure half the cast from Buffy and Angel ended up on an episode of Supernatural one time or another, and I just kind of felt like they were just going through. I'm like, oh, here's Amy Acker. Hi, yeah. What's up?
Supernatural, and do you know the other show that almost everybody was eventually on? Grey's Anatomy.
Oh,
okay. See, I wouldn't be watching that, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah,
I
was like, oh,
a lot of my favorite sci-fi actors always ended up on Stargate, but I don't remember seeing them on Stargate.
Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, weirdly, like if you, my family and I have watched every episode of Grey's Anatomy. It's the only network show that we still watch, really, with any regularity.
And it's been on like 20 years now.
19 seasons, I think.
It's like Simpsons 20. Territory, and they're not animated.
Yeah, and but the crazy thing is, like, if you watch it from beginning to end, you will see, I believe even Leia, who plays Indira, was on Grey's.
It's like a child getting her appendix out or something.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Or she was talking stuffings. Okay, so Sarah Stacy has a question. She says, as an audio engineer, I'm curious about how you manage recording all those who couldn't be in the same studio. Was it challenging? Or did you make them all go in one box and fight it out?
Well,
the sound effects actually happened.
That's a great question, Sarah. So almost everybody was able to be there. We did have, we had certain bits that were recorded prior to the big session with everybody. For instance, Danny Strong lives in New York and is working around the clock, obviously. He's incredibly successful. And so we did record Danny separately. There were a few of the smaller parts that were recorded separately. Most everybody came in, and all the main actors except for Tony Head were in the same room, but we actually had Tony live from London.
Yay!
So when you're
that just gave me chills.
Yeah. So, well, imagine, I mean, the cast was so excited because here you have this gigantic TV screen in the studio.
Tony,
and we're basically zooming with Tony. And they're performing off of Tony live.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, technology has allowed us to do incredible stuff. And so that was wonderful to have him in there live, even though he actually brought his little Mr. Giles nameplate from
his librarian desk.
Yes.
Or from
So he brought it into the studio in London so he could hold it up and show it to everybody. And of course, you know, Charisma and everybody were like, oh,
Did they make him wear glasses and take them off? Because when we see him right now, and if I'm not wrong, I swear he plays a character named Rupert again on Ted Lasso, which I'm like, but you're like the evil version of Rupert because all you ever do is mess up Rebecca.
I thought of him as Bizarro Giles, played.
But he doesn't wear glasses on that. So how would he do that and take them off to clean them all the time?
He doesn't wear glasses, but I do think that we have a line in there where Cordelia asks Giles for a comforting glasses cleaning.
Yes.
What
was it like? So obviously you've been involved in this universe for a long time, but you started as a fan. Mm-hmm. Is that correct to say? What was it like for you to see and be with all of these original cast members saying the words you and Amber wrote together? Did you like fanboy out? Did you try to keep that inside? Did you go in the bathroom and cry?
You know what? It's
or were you professional?
Yeah, I mean, I get excited and happy about the creative process, but I honestly don't feel like I can say I've ever fanboyed over anybody except years ago, Tom Snegoski and I were having a meeting with some producers in LA. And because we were from back east, I think they wanted to impress us. So they brought us to the Four Seasons. Mm-hmm. So we're in the bar, the lounge in the Four Seasons, and Don Knotts came in.
The incredible Mr. Lehman.
Yes, about a year before he died.
Yeah.
And because that was my childhood.
Yeah.
Boston's creature level feature.
Just exploded with like childhood glee. And so yes, I fanboyed like hell over Don Knotts, but the reality is I had met and even become friends with many people who were involved in this prior multiple times. And so, I mean,
and Amber's next to you, Elbring, be cool, Christopher, stop it. You're embarrassing me in front of my friends.
Yeah. I think the only member other than Leia, of course, of our cast who I had never met was Emma.
Okay. Oh,
well, that's not your fault because she was stuck in that reality dome that Wanda trapped her in, and it took a while to get her out. So,
exactly.
I'm sorry for spoilers.
And I also didn't say to Emma, "Hey, you know, I really enjoyed you on 90210."
Yeah, that would be. That's not.
I would have probably said that though.
So, I'm
like,
I don't know. I guess it's just, I'm about the work. You know, which is a weird thing to say, but I...
No, but you're there, you're focused, and then that shows in the product that we get. And when it's all done and you're doing the press junket, then you can go ahead and fanboy out.
Even, I mean, again, like, even after I had seen the very first episode, my mind was already thinking, oh, I'd like to play in this world. What would that entail?
Right.
And so, so it was about the work, like even from the very beginning. And
well, and you said a minute ago something about you did a video game or a couple of video games.
Tom Sadowski and I wrote both of the Buffy the Vampire Slayer video games.
Okay, so I still need help on the first one. And yeah, I haven't played it in 20 some years, but I kept getting stuck because I couldn't figure out what I needed to touch to make the different passages open up. It's a hard
just
game.
Look up cheats. Just
you know
look
what?
Up cheats.
I, no, like I know this. I did. And I'm still like, what do I smash to get the tomb to open to go inside to fight the thing?
I have to confess that I never finished the second one.
You didn't finish playing it or you finished writing it?
The first one I prefer. Okay. I
think
the
that's
story
when I
better
had
this
when it came out. We're talking a long time ago when I actually played video games because that's what I did. And it was a hard game. And I'm like, I just want to smash stuff. And I'm not patient or good at problem solving.
You're
puzzles.
Good at problem solving no, or puzzles or video games or, oh, never mind.
Like, and I'm dead again. All right, hold on. Run, get back. But I didn't realize you did all those too. So later I'll send you, like, can you please give me the cheat codes and then I'll go find the disc.
I don't have any of that.
He can just tell you the end of the story.
Yes. Yeah.
And I know you probably can't talk about this. And I don't want to give any spoilers for what Slayer's A Buffyverse story is, but it does leave it open for perhaps a second, third, or fourth one. Is that something that you cannot talk about, but maybe give us like a sign?
Well, I mean,
I can talk about
I can talk about our intentions, which, you know, our intentions while doing this were just to do it.
Right.
But absolutely, it is left in a place where if we were able to do 10 more of them, we could. Yeah. And I would love to do more. Amber would love to do more. And I think the cast, most of the cast anyway, we'll see what happens, would love to do more. And I think Audible would love to do more.
Yeah. I mean, and frankly, as just one little fan here, I need more of Charisma Carpenter's Cordelia being a vampire slayer.
Yes. Is that a spoiler to say that? Because I feel like that happens earlier.
No, that's in the blur.
It's not a spoiler.
I mean, it's a spoiler to even say some of these people are in it because I'm like listing characters who are dead. I'm like, I remember, I can picture Anya dying. Wait, I can remember Tara dying. How are all these people here? And we won't have to say how, but you are obviously going dead. You died so many times, I can't even keep track of.
Spike died too many times. He was a ghost. He was dead.
He's got this. He's in the ambulance.
Yes, Spike especially. You know, there was at New York Comic Con.
Blondie Bear?
There was like an installation. They call it an activation off site where you could go in and there was all kinds of. It was an event set up with a listening booth and a tarot booth and a bar and all this stuff and a place to fight a vampire slayer and all this stuff.
Whoa.
And as you walked in, there were plaques with the names of the characters and their sort of life and death dates, you know, memorial.
Oh my God. Spikes must have been huge.
Spikes had all of them.
Oh boy.
Birth and death, mm-hmm. birth and death, you know. But no, look, I mean, Amber and I absolutely want to do more. We're hoping to be able to do more. I have no announcements to make. At least not that you can say right now. Well, I mean, I will tell you honestly that as of this moment, I do not know if there will be more. But I know that everyone involved would like there to be more.
Well, heck, it's recently come out. The more people who listen to it, the more incentive Audible will have to say,
hey, I mean, it just came out. It was like October 12th.
Yeah.
Is that when it came out?
Yes, October 12th.
Yeah. Because I was waiting, not patiently, like from the moment you announced, I'm like, and pre-order that and just TikTok, come on. And then that day, I'm like,
that's the day I get my new credit. So I was just like, and
listen. Well, it's also, you know, the thing is, there are a lot of moving parts involved with licensing you know, and all of that stuff. And thankfully, that's not my job. So we're just sort of waiting for that to, you know, for that to kind of, for them to sort of figure out if we're going to be able to continue. But I know that everybody would like to, and Amber and I have had many conversations about what comes next for a variety of characters, if we're able to. We've had conversations with cast members about what comes next if we're able to, so.
Well, Jennifer's going to probably bombard you with, like, I want this to happen, and this to happen.
I feel like he knows what I want to happen.
I would be cast as
the only person who has expressed their opinions about what should happen.
Or other than you cast me as Cordelia's love interest, then I would like her to date Spike. There.
I was going to say, I don't see why Clem can't have like a sponsorship deal with the grape soda company, because I have grape soda in the house now, thanks to him, because when I went, I'm like, that looks good. And I haven't had grape soda in so long. I'm like, I could do with some grape soda.
No, you're like, Clem is right. Good. Grape soda is delicious.
It is delicious. I love it because it doesn't taste like grapes. It just tastes like purple.
It's purple. It's purple flavor. Right? Let's be real. Absolutely. Anything artificial grape is purple.
That's a childhood thing of mine, grape soda. That was
I love it. So was Clem's love of grape soda just a full-blown Christopher Golden thing?
Insert.
So Amber was probably like, grape soda? Gross. I'd rather talk about the kittens. Does she like it too?
Because it's you know, the I have to say, the fascinating thing about working with these actors in the studio was watching them appreciate each other. And so like when Leia came in the first day, it was Leia and James and James.
Mm-hmm.
And when Leia started, and they both have said this, you could see them both kind of stand up a little straighter, like, oh, we're not fooling around here. She's really good. We've got ourselves a true big talent.
We can't phone it in. I didn't even comment on either one of them.
I mean, they're both incredibly professional, incredibly talented, but you could see the response. And it was really gratifying to see, because most of them had either not worked with James Leary personally or not worked with him much, because he was a minor character and like
his last total scene minutes. Driving out of town.
Yeah.
Live class.
So watching them watch him mm-hmm. was so great, because he's so funny and he's so talented, and seeing the, you know, so when we did the New York Comic Con panel, and you know, Charisma took time to like take a moment to point out like how great he was, which is so gracious of her. And you know, that whole experience was the best part of it, was to see that. Great.
I love that so much.
Go ahead, Jen.
Oh, I was going to say, there's just like this weird bond with performers
mm-hmm.
that whether like people you were in a show with. So in my case, I never did TV or movies, but I did professional stage plays for a long time. And I know we would like, I'd come across actors that I'd worked with on like, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird, Oedipus, blah, blah, blah. And like, you immediately go back to that really amazing bond you had, because you have to trust each other so much.
Mm-hmm.
And just for me, watching actors get to play off each other and appreciate each other is just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. when you talked about the chemistry between Charisma and James Marsden.
Jeez Louise.
But also the chemistry between Charisma and Leia is huge.
Yes. Again, chills. You know,
well, speaking of chemistry, though, like there were pairs we finally got back, and seeing, like, or hearing rather, certain characters together again was just like, again, the chills, but also bringing you back to that. And because everything's done by voice, you can picture these characters doing all these things because you already know their physicality and all this stuff. And there were certain lines that weren't exactly the same lines that they'd been in, but I can physically see, because there's certain things, Juliet Lando as Drusilla, do it again. And she doesn't say it exactly that, but I'm like, I've seen that episode so many times.
Right.
I mean, my kids are a little disturbed by the fact that I go run and catch.
Well, and that's honestly,
like, Juliet, no, that's not a nursery rhyme.
I would say of the whole cast, Juliet is the one who is, most an encyclopedia of her own character and her own,
yeah, I mean,
her memory and an ability to tap into Drusilla, mm-hmm, is incredible. And there were scenes we sort of revised on the fly to accommodate things that she was remembering. Like, we need to include this. Like, yes, you're right, 100%. Mm-hmm. Let's do that. And again, she's chilling in the room. It's
I love Drusilla, love Juliet Landau, obviously knew she was amazing, but I almost forgot how amazing she was. And then like her first lines, I'm just like, oh, she's back there 100%.
She's mesmerizing in the room. Honestly,
I can't even imagine the energy that would be,
mm-hmm,
like, so exciting as an actor, as a writer, as a director.
Yeah. Well, now I'm coming up with a list of other characters who, if we are not limited by the fact that their character might already be dead, who I want to see come back. And if I can just specifically ask for Lila to come back. Okay, Lila and Lindsay both. Mostly just because I'm in love with Christian Kane. Can we just pass it on to him that I know he's busy. He's usually beating people up on other shows. He's all strong now with the longer hair, but
yeah, he's hot too.
There's a guy who keeps tweeting at us, asking us to put Scott Hope in the show. And I'm like, why?
Scott Hope. I don't even remember who Scott Hope is. What's Scott Hope?
He was some boyfriend in like two episodes or something.
Yeah, like an early boyfriend of Buffy's in the first season, who was just like a normal guy who she went to the Bronze with, like,
and
once.
Didn't want to go out with her. I remember Owen, who was full of lots of Owen-ness, but I don't remember.
Scott the one who was like fetishizing the Slayerdom?
Yeah.
Like, and I was just like, I don't feel any overwhelming need to include him, but.
No.
I mean, you could turn that on its head, though.
Well, and the guy that she started dating in the beginning of her college years, and that she ended up in the episode of Beer Bad, where she just ends up bopping him on the head, and that was fine. That was enough for him. We don't need to bring everybody back. Right. Like, we have to have a little connection to them. But, like, you know, Jasmine wants to come back and take over the world. Gina Torres.
I'd love some harmony.
Harmony. We all love harmony.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about Buffy. We're going to keep talking about Buffy, but before we get, I don't want to like end the show before we talk a little bit about the House of Last Resort, because that is your book coming out soon.
In January.
Yeah, I'm going to be at your like weird fan weekend that you're doing.
You said something about this weird fan weekend, and I should have asked more follow-up questions.
I don't know. I literally just signed up for it, and I like, the second he posted it, I'm like, I'm going.
You know, it's funny. I've been doing this a long time. I've been writing full-time for 31 years. You know, it becomes with the splintering of social media and the sort of, the hate stream that is Twitter, and the algorithm controls on Facebook and all stuff, it becomes harder and harder to sort of promote your work. And so I had posted one day, you know, like, boy, I'm just trying to figure out how to promote this book that comes out in January. And Brian Keene called me, and he and I are good friends, and did two podcasts together. And Brian said, I have the perfect idea. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, Christopher Golden's House of Last Resort weekend.
Yes.
And immediately I was like this. I was like,
For those who can't see, Christopher is now hidden inside of his hoodie.
Yes. He's so the idea of of labeling something like that with my own name felt obnoxious to me. Like I just
so you're like, am I that kind of douchebag? No.
Yes, exactly. No, like, it made my skin crawl to even consider it. Right.
Yeah.
But I talked to a number of other writers, Josh Mallerman, and a number of other people, and just said like, is this a crazy thing? And they were like, oh my God, no, that's fantastic.
You and then they signed up.
And I was like, all right, all right.
But Josh Mallerman would always tell you to do the crazy thing. I'm not sure he's the person you should go to talk yourself out of something. I'm just saying.
Well, in any case, I contacted a number of other writers and said, if I did this thing, would you come? One person was unable to come, but would have come otherwise. And everyone else said, yeah, I would definitely come.
I love
So all of a sudden we had this thing. And I have to say that the response has been amazing. The number of writers whose work I love who are going to be there is amazing. And I think it's going to be an old fashioned readers and writers horror convention.
I love it.
You know, a programming schedule of panels in one room with some really interesting conversations I think we're going to have. And then, you know, everyone will be hanging out in the bar and drinking. And then after the panels, we're going to have a small room where Copper Dog Books from Beverly, Massachusetts, it's going to be set up so that everybody who's on the panel who wants to go sign right after their panel can go up into the little room where Copper Dog has set up. And just, so there won't be a room full of authors sitting around tables all weekend. It'll be authors sort of milling about, you know, schmoozing and hanging out and with drinking. People all weekend.
Except and drinking. For, there might be
and some drinking. Yes. As authors tend to do. But
mostly no, so never. Never
I was do self-conscious about it, but I'm actually really excited about it. But the other thing about it is the two things that I said to Brian, number one, it's free. So basically, like if it costs you money to eat and to stay at a hotel and to do all those things, great. But we're not charging anything. I'm paying for the panel room myself, so we're not charging anybody anything to come. And also, we're only doing it once. And that's the thing I said immediately. Like when I first started the Merrimack Valley Halloween Book Festival, it was supposed to be one time. And
look what you've done.
And
I'm not involved in planning that festival anymore. I will attend in the future, but I'm not organizing. This year was the first year without me. I just can't.
It's a lot too much on my plate. It's a lot to organize any event, and even be a small part of organizing an event is. So I'm on the committee for the New England Crime Bake, yeah. And I'm one person on a committee, and you can ask Allison.
You're busy.
I've got crime bake stuff. I've got a. But well, so I'm thrilled about this weekend.
That's... I mean, for authors who are doing all these different panels, you wonder when they have time to actually write more books. So I understand. Do it once and it's just one weekend and then you're back to having time to write.
Well, that's it. And honestly, the other reason why I wanted to do it once is because I really thought, well, okay, if this goes well, like if it's a popular thing that everybody's happy that we did. I should only do it once because that way other writers who want to do a similar thing to promote a work of theirs can imitate the formula that we did and we're not competing with that.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully that will sort of pick up. It'll be interesting.
I love it. And you're also giving us New Englanders, especially a weekend in January to look forward to. Yep. My husband, who's not a writer, was like, can I go? I'm like, no. Well, yeah, it's free. You're going to be in the hotel. Like, no. Well, I got the hotel room. You can go.
I was just thinking he's got to stay home and watch Tubby.
No, we also got a dog. Okay. I mean, like, there are like dozens of great restaurants in Portsmouth within like blocks of where we're staying and all. You know, I think it's going to be great. I'm looking forward.
Is it already booked up? Like, if people are still interested, can people reach out to you? Or you're like, that's it? No more room?
They don't have to reach out to me. They can go, if you go to my website, there's on the banner along my website, there's a link for it. And you all you have to do is register. It's free, but you need to register to go.
And Amanda says, sounds so awesome. Amanda, I agree. And if someone wants to watch my kids, I'm coming too, but that's unlikely. I can barely.
And I know Amanda's local. So I'm like, Amanda, that is awesome.
Amanda, go.
Jennifer's husband can watch your kids. Just bring them.
Bring them to California. Yeah, from California to New Hampshire. They can stay in our haunted house.
They met Chella's dog, which is the same kind of dog that Jennifer has. So I think if we just
my dog is more famous than I will ever be.
The dog and my children can keep each other entertained and free us up for a while. I mean, the dog can watch a 13, 10, and 8-year-old, right?
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, the 13-year-old watches the dog, and the dog watches the other two kids.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. If you don't mind the place getting burned down in the process, this will work perfectly.
Perfect.
I mean, that's fine. That's fine. So what day in January does your book actually come out, The House of Last Resort?
It comes out, I believe it comes out the 23rd, if that's a Tuesday. That sounds right to me.
I think that is right.
And
it's so sad that I'm like,
But it's going to debut at the weekend. We're going to have it in advance of its release in bookstores. Proper Dog will have it for sale at the event.
And I'll be reading it drunk at the bar.
Sounds like a really weird way to do a live author reading. Everybody just takes turns reading around,
slurring the word
line.
Yeah.
Since
yes, exactly. Everybody
want to read.
You have to take a shot and read a page.
Doesn't have to be in order. Better if it's not.
Better if it's not. May I film this? And can this be a very special episode of Vox Vomitus?
Sure.
Done. You're like, oh no.
But that's a great formula. And I think that's an exciting way to do it. And I know other authors who are like, how do I do a launch and who am I going to have? Because no one wants to sit there and watch one author be like, I have my book. That's so awkward. And half of us, I mean, I'm more of an ambivert, but most of us are just like, I go write so that I don't have to talk to people. You want me to be on stage talking to strangers and talking about my life. No, I don't want to do that. That sounds terrible.
You know, it's funny because it took me years to realize that I'm what's called an extroverted introvert.
Yeah.
So like I love to go and do a panel as long as I don't have to moderate it. I have moderated panels, but I hate doing it. And then I like being around people, but the tank gets empty really fast. And then I have to retreat, you know, because it just
go in the hoodie.
Yeah, exactly.
Portable introvert station.
Hide inside my hoodie, yeah.
Yes.
So if we see somebody at Christopher Golden's House of Last Resort weekend with a hoodie drawn over his head.
It's Christopher.
All cinched up. Yeah. That's Christopher. And we just ignore you for a little while.
Just
no,
pretend
you go
I'm not
bring
there.
Him a drink and put it there. And then when he comes
put
out,
a drink underneath the hoodie.
Yeah.
With a big straw.
Abby says she doesn't like talking to anyone. You talk to me plenty. But technically, it's more like texting because of the time difference and all that stuff. Yeah. But you're going to have to get used to that at least a little bit during author panels. You have to do it, dear. Mm-hmm. It's true.
Agreed.
No, but I get the understood. Like, I love being on panels, too. I loved moderating the event that was recently at Gibson's bookstore. But I will say it was like 4 days of like a slow panic attack before that. Because I was just like...
Can verify.
Oh, I'm like, what if it's bad? What if nobody comes? What if nobody comes and I have to say all the words and the other authors don't want to talk?
Everybody came.
I know. So it was good. And all of the authors I was with, thank goodness, were amazing. And I always have to remember when you're just talking to other authors and fans, it's always going to go well.
Well, you're always going to have something to talk about because you have something in common to begin with. You know,
yeah.
The dread that you have for a panel is like, I'm very talkative on panels, but I try to be cognizant of the fact that, like, you know, you want to make sure that the other authors talk, especially the authors who are reluctant to talk,
especially
since I'm a middle-aged straight white guy, I want to make sure that the other people on the panel have an opportunity to talk. What I can't stand is being on a panel with somebody who thinks that they're the most entertaining person in the room and therefore should be doing all the talking.
Yeah.
Especially when I was on a panel with Neil Gaiman and there was a guy on the panel who kept talking. And I was just like,
and it wasn't Neil Gaiman. Was
and it wasn't
no.
Neil Gaiman.
And it's like, nobody sitting in this audience wants to hear any of us speak except Neil.
We are Neil's, like, what would you be, like pipettes? Like, do-do-do, we're just
the yeah, like, we're literally just do. Here so that Neil can occasionally get catch a breath and take a moment.
So he can take a sip of water.
Right, so he can take a drink of water. And it was like, I wanted to literally say, dude, they don't care what you have to say. They're here to hear Neil. And anyway.
Afterwards, can you tell us who that is? I just want to know. It's probably not who it is.
We can't talk about things like that. I think the panic that I had the most about every panel I ever do, it's weirdly, am I going to have to hold a microphone in my hand? Am I going to have to speak into a microphone? Because I always go back to, I went to school for theater. I learned to project my voice just so I would never have to use a microphone.
I was going to say, why do you have a problem?
Why are you afraid of microphones?
Yeah, now I understand.
I don't know. I don't like hearing my voice projected back at me. It's you know, it's all neuroses. It's all like good old fashioned New England neuroses. Also, I don't like to hold a microphone unless I think I'm doing stand-up comedy.
I can see that.
Okay. So, I mean, this is a conversation Josh Mallerman and I have all the time where we're like, the only appropriate time is if you're singing a song or you're like, yo.
Tell a joke. Sing your answers.
Yeah.
Or pretend you're winning an award.
Oh, but then you just accept it. You're like, thank you for this.
Yeah, because then I'd be holding the award. I'm going to hold my hair pick.
Yeah, no, I did that when I got the Vince Laguno stuff that he sent to us, and I was wearing the hot dog fingers and accepting the award. It was really fun. Mm-hmm. No, but Christopher, I love what you said about making sure that the people who maybe are coming from demographics we don't hear from as much, I hope you sit next to them and just when they're not looking, just push them closer to their microphone, just help them, and then like lower the microphone mm-hmm. there, and then just directly, what do you think? And then they have no choice but mm-hmm. to answer. Just sneak them in there.
No, I mean, it's I have been on panels with, let's put it this way. I have been on panels with men who helped me realize how obnoxious it is mm-hmm. it's just like, and I'm somebody who talks a lot, you know, like, and I have to now, as I've gotten older, I've learned to sort of start to control myself and make space for other people. But I was a kid growing up who was like, I finally realized that the reason I do what I do, period, is that as a child, all I wanted was for everybody to love all the things I loved. Because like, this thing is amazing. Yeah. What's wrong with you that you don't think this is amazing? You need to love it.
Can you please talk to my 8-year-old?
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to beat these ideas over your head. Come on.
Yeah, this is great, and you should think it's great too.
Yeah, and as a parent, the number of times I have to, I'm not in a conversation, I'm moderating a conversation, and that's exactly it. It's the 8-year-old who's like, these are the things that are amazing, and it doesn't matter what the conversation is, I will bring it back to whatever exciting thing I need you to know about that no one else cares about.
It's
and
trains.
Part of growing up is learning. I wish it was trains. I would rather talk about trains. It's not trains. But to be able to understand that a conversation is a dialogue, and if you're at a panel for a certain thing, and everybody's participating, it can't only just be you. Mm-hmm. It is what it is.
Exactly.
They're all 8-year-old little boys.
I think there's part of like any creative person. We are all that child who wants somebody to be really interested in what we're interested in, because eventually that's going to become our stories.
Mm-hmm.
So from like the age of 7 on, we're just like, all right, we're that one author at a panel who's like, I'm going to read you my thing. Oh. But not picking up on the social cues that the audience does not want a reading.
No. Yeah.
Well, and also, I'd rather be on the panel than be the guy at the panel. It's always a guy who has to stand up and say, well, this isn't really a question, but.
Yeah.
Oh, just muted your microphone. Yeah. And there are times when I wish I would just start muting my, and I don't do it on this show, and maybe I should, but I've never muted.
Oh, you wouldn't want to mute me.
I would never mute you, but I've never muted a guest, even ones who have said to us things like, I wasn't done yet.
That's only Sorry. Happened twice, and I think.
Twice?
That was not a man. That was
two different people?
Two different people.
No.
When it was, we'll just say like a very long monologue had happened about
and
something.
You know, move on the conversation.
We were like, okay, let's just like, oh yeah, no, I'm not done. And then like another monologue.
Oh, we're having technical problems.
Wow.
No, but yeah, I think that happened once or twice. I have one very clear memory and one vague memory. But the clear memory is the one that we're both like, I remember.
But Christopher, okay, so I don't get to go to this weekend because of my children and their fire starting problems.
And the fact that you live 3,000 miles away.
Well, there is that. It would be very, very cumbersome for me to get there. But I want to hear more about the book itself, because the last thing I read from you, other than Slayers, was All Hallows, correct? So I'm assuming this is another horror story. You are not veering outside of the horror realm. Can you tell us just a little bit to tease us to get to January?
So, well, tell me when we have to move on from it. No, okay.
No, I am.
The House of Last Resort is about a young American couple who have decided to chuck it all. I don't know if you guys are aware, this is real, that in Italy and a couple of other countries,
yes, but
in Italy specifically, there are lots of places where you can buy a house for €1 as long as you promise €1.
I've done all the research.
There are all these places in Italy that are basically vacant, like half the town is left.
What's the catch then? You can buy it for €1 as long as
you want. Yeah.
I'll tell you, the catch is you have to live there yourself.
Okay.
And you have to spend at least €50,000 over 5 years, and you have to stay for at least 5 years, and you have to spend €50,000 fixing the place up. And that's it. That's the only catch. Because they're trying to bring new blood into these towns that are sort of becoming ghost towns because young people leave to go to Rome or Milan or whatever. And so they're trying to bring people from everywhere. And so this novel is about this young American couple who both work remotely, who are just like, yes, let's go do that.
Yeah.
And in fact, they find a home in a town where the guy's grandparents actually live. They're from this town, so he has family history in this town.
But what could go wrong from there?
What could go wrong from there is that the house that they end up buying has a lot of secrets in it. The first inkling they have, and this is all I'll say, is when his grandmother realizes that they didn't buy the house she thought they were buying. They bought this other house. She flips out and tells them that they should move out, and that at the very least they cannot have children in the house.
Oh,
I love that so much. So when I read the premise of this book, my husband and I, every time we get just kind of like sick and tired, we immediately start looking at the €1 houses in Italy and in Portugal. They each have different criteria of like, okay, if it's,
what do you got to do?
Yeah. And then we always go, what if this one's possessed by demons?
That's a selling point for you.
Not demons.
Oh, okay. So ghosts are demons or not. But what if it's a feral demon? What if it's a demon like Clem? I mean,
what if it's a demon like Clem?
What if it is Clem? I mean, that's the thing.
Oh, I mean, that's Clem. I mean,
you can't have a cat.
I pay €2 for that. Well, I'm allergic to cats. So
yeah, unless you get one of the naked ones that ends up looking like Clem.
Clem would be providing a service.
Yeah.
Removing the cats. A cat removal service. Because Clem really does already look like those little naked cats. She's already, you know, the little warm. I forget. I don't know if they have a real name, but the cats that have no hair. They're
the Sphinx.
The Sphinx. Yes. He looks like what? A wrinkled Sphinx cat.
Yeah.
Hot. On that note, hot. Floppy ears. A lot of wrinkly skin.
Wrinkled face.
Christopher, as always, you have been amazing. I can't wait for the House of Last Resort. I can't wait for maybe possible future Slayers.
Let's hope.
If there's more demons, can we vote for Skip? Skip.
One vote for Skip.
One vote for Skip.
We're going to have a whiteboard next time where we're like, it's going to be. But everybody who's watching this live or watching it on the replay, please download Slayers, A Buffyverse Story from Audible, and also make sure to check out Christopher's upcoming book, The House of Last Resort. I'm sure we will have you back for that. I will film people at your House of Last Resort weekend.
Sounds
for a very special episode, as long as I have their consent.
And make sure it's like informed consent, because if there are already 4 shots,
I know, lawyer. Images,
3 sheets to the wind, really, literally sheets of paper.
I'll make a little form. Even though we're just going to be doing this to celebrate Christopher's book.
That's right. Listen, everybody wants to get a little drunk and read that
book.
I was going to say, what pairs well with a possessed house? I'm just curious. Like
in Italy?
Well, in this case, it would be Italian wine.
Italian stuff, yeah.
Italian wine and apple.
Chianti.
Chianti. Yeah. There's, please, I've been drunk in Italy plenty of times.
You're like, I don't need help on this part. I can do that.
I can make sure people are drinking the right things.
Oh, you can't have vodka. That's not Italian.
No, it's not going to be vodka.
Just another service you provide.
Just another service I can provide for
She's
you.
Full service, Jennifer.
For, oh, wow. Yikes. On that note. That's great.
Thank you guys for having me.
We have next week off because I have New England Crime Bay.
Crime Bay.
So I will be busy panicking about that and saving my voice for talking for many days straight.
But we'll see you the week after.
See you the week after, everyone.
Bye.